when I was doing research for this talk, and yes, I do research for the talks, usually, as with most research, I sit down to prove what it is that I already think. I had a rude awakening because the talk was premised on the idea that culture and cult and occult were all related. Well, two out of three are related, and so that's a pretty good average. A cult isn't. Cult and culture both come from the word, or related to the word, to cultivate. And the reason that the subject came up was I got one of those strange calls from my wife in the middle of the day. She said, "Honey, what's a culture?" And of course, I answered immediately something to do with yogurt. And she gave me that look that some of you are giving me, but she's so good, she can do it over the phone. And so I got that look over the telephone. I said, okay, you know, culture is, what is it? We all kind of agree, and I'll go more to this, that whatever culture is, it's going to hell. But other than that, there isn't an awful lot of agreement on what culture is. So I thought I'd go back to the root. And the root has to do with those things that we cultivate. It's a garden. It's related, of course, to agriculture, to aquaculture, to horticulture, for those of you who are raising hortus. And, well, it's a Star Trek reference for a certain generation. It's the things that we choose to plant and to nourish. And it's also, by extension, the things that we choose to weed out, to take away from our garden, to try to keep away from us. Culture is the manifestation of the choices that we make, and so many of our choices are not right or wrong, but simply unexamined. And as a culture and as individuals, we often don't take the responsibility for those things in our culture that we choose to invite in, that we choose to nourish, that we choose to weed out. And sometimes it's hard to know. An absolutely true story, of which I'm not particularly proud, but it's true nonetheless, and related to the topic today, maybe central to it. When I was in junior high school, I had a gardening class. And the gardening teacher, Mr. Long, said, "All right, Dober, go out there and I want you to take the weeds out from the ranunculus." And I took the ranunculus out from the weeds. Now, knowing me as he did, Mr. Long assumed that I had done this on purpose and I was just being smart. And you're kind of put in this really strange position where you have to plead how stupid you are. And however, in this area, it was completely true. I took out the ones that at that moment looked to me more like weeds than flowers. I didn't see the potential in what the flowers were, and all I saw was the thing that was growing and flourishing and seemed to me to be stronger and maybe prettier. Well, we are taught how to make choices about what's strong and what's pretty and what comes into our garden, what comes into our homes, what comes into our lives, and those things that we keep out, that we fear, that we reject. Culture is the learned part. All of us as human beings have certain things that we do. We eat. But what we eat is learned and is cultural and is handed down to from generation to generation. We eat for breakfast cereals. Some from cold north eat hot cereals even when they've moved to the warm south because it's part of a tradition. Some of us eat animals. Some of us don't. Some of us eat cows, and there are people who eat dogs. And we automatically go, well, that's wrong. That's sick. That's disgusting. No, that's cultural. There are people that eat incredibly spicy foods and just cannot imagine the blandness of some cuisines. People for whom parsley is an exotic herb. Don't encourage me or I'll go off channeling Garrison Keillor. But I mean, there are cultures for which parsley is an exotic herb, and others who, if you're not crying and you don't feel the burn, and I'm not talking about exercising here, you just haven't had dinner. These are things that we learn how to do. We learn about it in food. We learn about it in sex, what's right, what's wrong, what's in the garden, what's outside the garden. We learn about it in music and all of the various aspects of what we consider culture to be. Art, music, communication. These are things that almost every people and every society participates in, but what is beautiful music and what is cacophony? The clearest universal standard that all of humanity agrees on is that a generation ago, the music was better. In China, in America, in North Africa, in Iraq, whatever you are, it was better then. Kids were more polite then. It was just everything was better then. This is what I call the astigmatism of nostalgia, that we see through, through a glass darkly, but we actually see through the Doris Day lens that erases the lines and the fissures and the blemishes of the past, and we see golden ages when giants walked upon the earth and everything was better. Now, I'm not arguing against our perception of the debasement of the culture, but culture has been seen by pundits as being in debasement since the beginning of recorded history. We always see those other generations as having been giants. We look at the greatest generation of World War II, and we understand their bravery, and we understand that they came out of a difficult time of the Depression, and they went into a yet more difficult time of a war. But when we think just of the 60s, my generation thinks of love and peace, and there's an awful lot of things about the 60s that we forget. When America thinks of the 50s, of those halcyon days of the 50s and pre-halcyon sleepless nights of the 50s, we think of what a wonderful and peaceful and great society it was for white males. But we don't get the rest of the picture. Every generation produces its own ideas and mores and history, and it's important, and the reason that it is important, to see our culture in a balanced way, not simply on this inevitable road to hell, is that if the road is inevitable, and if it is to hell, then why the hell get up in the morning and engage it? If the process of human history has only been going from bad to worse yet, to still worse, why get up in the morning and be a warrior of the light? Why engage a world that just is going to be immune to our actions, our activities, and our choices? The choices that we make in terms of our culture, those things that we honor, that we bring in, that we say are good and we want more of, and those things that we say are not good and we want less of, these are now, in this shrinking world, real choices that we get to make. We are no longer these homogeneous groups that can live in isolation between two oceans, as America has thought it could. We are no longer homogeneous groups that are immune from the problems and the challenges and the joys and the good influences of every people and every culture. One of the places where Karl Marx went wrong was that Karl Marx looked at ownership of technology and thought that that is what generated values. I would say to you that it is the technology itself that generates our values. This is an important call. I have to take it. Okay, so now they're just 120 people sitting here. It's all right. No. They're not important right now, because to be able to reach out and be connected to the world and to be available at any moment is far more important than the people right in front of you. Because you I can ignore because this is far more important in my life. This technology, as every technology has, generates part of our culture and our cultural mores. Is it all right to have our phones on in church? Is it all right? I did a wedding yesterday in the middle of a beautiful glen underneath the trees with a rushing river going by. Set your ringtones to Beethoven or Mozart if you got to turn it on, if you're so important that you got to turn it on. We have not as a culture decided what the role of this is in our lives. But the technology is one of the greatest influencers of our culture and of our values. People could sit out in cottages once upon a time and they could do handiwork. And then the technology got more complicated and you needed a big machine. And so you needed a factory. And so you needed a city. And the cities grew around the factories. And the smoke came out and people were employed. And that changed how people lived, what they breathed, what the structure of their family was. And the cities, well, somebody invented a car. And the car changed the cities, and people moved out to the suburbs and paved paradise and put in a parking lot. And the children got cars and went to the drive-ins. And the nature of family and sex and freedom all changed. And the pill was invented, and there were other changes. It is not necessarily the ownership of the technology, but it is the car, the city, the internet, the telephone, the computer that creates our sense of time. There's a different sense of time in third world countries than in industrialized countries. If you want to read a very interesting different sense of time, Chinua Achebe, a wonderful African writer in Center Will Not Hold, gives a whole different sense of time, because when the factory furnaces have to be lit and tended, attendance becomes something different from if you're just getting up in a cottage industry and sewing and knitting. As technology, again, decentralizes many of us and we can work from home and we can email it in or modem it in, again, the sense of time and the sense of connection changes. All of these things are things that happen to us and our sensibilities kind of automatically, and we don't really stop to think about what are the rules that we want and how do we enforce them and how do we just even examine them. One of the most interesting things to me is if we're talking about how cultures change, it was driving to church this morning. I was doing 80 miles an hour in the slow lane, because anything slower would have been suicidal, while people were passing me at 90 miles an hour and changing lanes and shifting. And when did 80, I guess 80 is the new 60. And in the same way that when you look at sports, when I play, this is not a going to hell story. This is just a change story. Don't be afraid of some change. When I was a kid and we played basketball, you got a rock step, and if that second foot came up, you traveled. Well, Lewis and Clark don't travel like basketball players travel today. You get at least three steps. Is that a bad thing? I don't know, but it is a change, and it's for the most part minor, perhaps, but an example of unexamined changes in our world. Once upon a time, and I'm not picking on Dean. Dean, where are you? Dean, stand up. Dean's wearing shorts. Once upon a time. Dean knew I was going to do this. Because he just came from church in Hawaii. I want to make sure the right fingers. There's a cultural thing here. There's nothing wrong with shorts. There's nothing sacred about neckties. But we drift, and we don't examine. And we don't talk about the changes that we participate in kind of automatically because we are tuned into the social meme, that we know what is in the air, and we become a part of that in so many ways. And there are so many unexamined changes in our culture. Many of them are wonderful. We have, and it is inescapable that we have, a Creole culture. I talked about years ago having gone into Steamers and seen a jalapeno cheese bagel. Now, my ancestors in the Shtetlach of Eastern Europe never dared dream of a jalapeno cheese bagel. I have every confidence that the people that started cultivating jalapenos never dreamed of that particular mating of cultures, but it's wonderful. It's wonderful. The best of our music, the best of our cuisine, the best of who we are as a nation is essentially Creole, is fusion that started Anglo-Saxon and African and expands to Latin America and expands to Asia. And all of these things come into our garden. There are good things blowing into the garden, good seeds that are being planted and taking root. The heart of my message is be conscious. Be conscious of what it is that we are creating as a culture and welcoming and appreciative, but not absolute in relativism, because not everything is okay and not everything in the ways that we interact with each other as human beings is okay. We get to make choices. We get to examine. We get to choose how to tend our big and wonderful and complex cultural garden. It means pruning. It means weeding. It means planting. It means nourishing. And it means respecting all of its various parts. Just to make it complete, the word cult just simply means that there's a wall around the garden. Walls won't keep the seeds from blowing in, the seeds of beautiful flowers and the seeds of weeds. Whether it is hidden from view and protected by a fence or not, the fences ultimately don't work. Choice and consciousness and respect and openness and a sense of responsibility for this garden that we share of a community, of a larger community, of a nation, and of a planet is where we create and sustain culture.